Exodus 8, verse 26. And Moses said, he's talking about, the Pharaoh called for Moses and for Aaron and said, go sacrifice to your God in the land, because the plague of flies just came on him. And so in the spirit, what happens, your religion gets screwed up. And so Pharaoh says to you, all right, we'll try this God stuff. We'll try this cross stuff, even. We'll try this doctrine stuff.
We can fit this in.
And Moses said, it is not meet so to do, for we will sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians to the Lord our God. Lo, shall we sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians before their eyes? Will they not stone us? We talked about that last time we met, that the chief god of that age was Taurus, and it was commanded they sacrifice several bullocks, so it couldn't be done. We think it can be done, so we say, okay, I'll pick up the cross in this world. I'll live in this world. I'll continue on my own way in this world. And Moses says to that, we will go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to the Lord our God as he shall command us. And the 3 days is symbolic ever and always of the escape of the world. That's why Christ was in the grave for 3 days. You cannot sacrifice, you cannot perform, you cannot be a believer in the world. It is impossible. And have any of the world value systems, because you will always sell out automatically. And Moses, who is the type of the law, ever and always says, you must go 3 days' journey. You must go through the death. You must go through the horror of great darkness. Else there's no life, there's no sacrifice, there's no... Otherwise you'll try to just apply the God stuff to your life. You'll try to seek to save your life. The abomination of the Egyptians is to kill the chief God. It's the abomination of you. It's the abomination of everything. And Pharaoh said, I will let you go that you may sacrifice to the Lord your God in the wilderness. Only you shall not go very far away. Entreat for me or pray for me. And Moses said, behold, I go out from thee, and I will entreat the Lord that the swarm of flies may depart from Pharaoh, from his servants, from his people, tomorrow. But let not Pharaoh deal deceitfully any more in not letting the people go to sacrifice to the Lord. And Moses went out from Pharaoh and entreated the Lord. And all of a sudden, it looks like your religion is a new thing. There may be more dead flies in it. You can do your stuff some more. You can continue on. That's why in the spirit, the reason Jews always have studied the scriptures and met together 3 times a week is so they're never more than the 3 days in terms of exhorting one another. They met Monday, Thursday, and Saturday. It was impossible to be more than the 3 days. You understand? There's a 3 days journey in time, in the passage of time, and there's the Sabbath day's journey in the physical. Now, to the child, to the new believer, the Sabbath day's journey is very, very close. And the Sabbath and the time is an hour maybe, or 2 hours, or 5 hours, or as you proceed from the child to the adolescent, to the young man, to the father, and pretty soon the Sabbath day's journey is the whole of time. It doesn't matter where you are, and it doesn't matter in what environment, because you've redeemed the time. And say, the Lord did according to the word of Moses. He removed the swarms of flies from Pharaoh, from his servants, from his people. There remained not one. And Pharaoh said, must have been a dream. This God stuff isn't real. I've got to protect myself. I've got to protect me and mine. Pharaoh hardened his heart at this time also, neither would he let the people go. Now this is a picture of you. So Pharaoh hardens his heart. Actually, God hardened Pharaoh's heart, is what we've seen earlier. And he puts the next plague on. Everybody understand flies now. It screws up your religion. Makes your religion smell. Proves the world is a tomb. Then you forget about it. Then the Lord said unto Moses, go in unto Pharaoh and tell him, thus saith the Lord God of the Hebrews, let my people go, that they may serve me. For if thou refuse to let them go and wait, and will hold them still, behold, the hand of the Lord is upon thy cattle which is in the field, upon the horses, upon the asses, upon the camels, upon the oxen, and upon the sheep. There shall be a very grievous murrain.
What's murrain?
Bad sickness.
Did it kill all
yeah, killed them. What?
Anthrax.
Well, the naturalists say that, excuse me, that the plague, the murrain, was caused by the flies. It could have been. The Lord shall sever between the cattle of Israel and the cattle of Egypt. Make a distinction, make a difference. And there shall nothing die of all that is the children of Israel's. And the Lord appointed a set time, saying, tomorrow the land shall do this thing in the land. The Lord shall do this thing in the land. And the Lord did that thing on the morrow, and all the cattle of Egypt died. But none of the cattle of the children of Israel died, not one. And Pharaoh sent, and behold, there was not one of the cattle of the Israelites dead. And the heart of Pharaoh was hardened, and he did not let his people go. Let the people go. To the Egyptians, cattle were sacred, like in India today. They believed that the gods took an animal form, so that all animals in Egypt were sacred, and it was an animistic kind of thing.
But they still slaughtered?
Huh?
Still slaughtered and ate meat and all that?
No, they didn't.
They didn't?
No.
They bled them and mixed blood.
Apis was one of the gods, was the bull. Isis was symbolic of the cow, became Israel's golden calf. Now suddenly all over Egypt, the stench of burning dead carcasses of animals rose in the air. What do you think that means? Why did God kill all the animals? No, it says he killed. The horses, the asses, the camels, the oxen, the sheep.
First the flies came and screwed up the religion and made it odious, but then the object of the, you know, like the icons, then they were slain. I mean, you know, all these were deities.
And what is its spiritual type in you? Why the hell did God do all this stuff anyway? Stupid thing for God to do. Running around killing all the cattle and poor little camels.
Well, if you depended on them, won't certainly be driven home.
This wasn't very fair. There were millions and millions of people that lived in Egypt. He just wiped them all. He just did all this stuff to them. It's terrible, God. This is a bad God.
It's really bad, you notice after being with your kids all week, how often you hear the phrase, "That's not fair." It's like, ooh, this is about fairness and idolatry put together.
He did this for only one reason, and that's to show you the vanity of gods, a vanity of idols, and so that you will know and will have and be without excuse.
If it's just a cow, it's it.
Yeah.
Where's it going if it's running now?
Well, I got to talk about something that is connected to this and sort of tangentially, but, you know, I sit around and I talk to you about expanding the meaning of stuff, you know, and we talk about that all that flattery is bribery, the spirit. You know, on and on and on. All it, you know, if you look on a woman to screw her, that you've already done it, and all these things. And I've talked to you over and over about rebellion. That rebellion just means that you're not letting out what's there. But the problem with this is that you take it, it causes you to come into a recognition or a state of mind that says, the natural is okay, it's the spiritual one we're concerned with. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's all right to go out and screw 50,000 women because I've already done it in the spirit, or in the area of rebellion, that committing fornication or adultery means that you're going to someplace else other than God for your sustenance, and so that means it's all right if I go out and commit fornication and adultery, because it means this.
Yeah, like that's in the world, or
rebellion.
It's okay, you just want to talk about it.
Or rebellion means, you know, if I don't say what's there, hallelujah.
Yeah, so you say really crappy, shitty things, you say,
rebellion has the component, I mean, all these things, the law is spiritual, but it also has its natural implications. And this thing came up with Harry. I can talk to you about these plagues till hell freezes over, and unless it touches something in you, it's meaningless. I can talk about the spiritual meaning of rebellion and saying rebellion is as sin as witchcraft all day. But what happened a few minutes ago was Harry was in here painting. And he was painting that black stuff on the paint thing on the wall, door. I said something about, Harry, this isn't too bright. They're having a Seder group in here, and you're painting an hour beforehand. And he got all offended, and he said so. And then he kept on painting. So I walked away and went. And a while ago, he's in there, and he says, I'm really troubled about what you said to me today. I mean, and he went on this scorecard of all the stuff that he's doing and how busy he is and how much time. And I said, Harry, it doesn't have anything to do with that. It has to do with your rebellion. I'm sure I said it differently than that, but the act of rebellion, it's all right. I mean, I don't care if, and nobody should care in terms of your husbands or wives or something. You can, it's rebellion if you don't speak, but once a decision is made, it's rebellion. It's still rebellion in the natural kind of rebellion. Do you understand me? And both of them produce witchcraft. Because I'm sure Harry's, after I walked away, he said, oh, that son of a bitch. And he didn't realize how hard I worked. I mean, so he's, the cauldron is going on in his mind. And so it's witchcraft. And it's sacrificing to demons and the spirit. You cannot sacrifice to God and to demons. You understand me? I mean, it's great fun to sit around and make and spiritualize all of the law so that you see its implications. But you can't ignore the rest of it either. The purpose of the law is to shut up your mouth. If it shuts up your mouth, it'll shut up your brain. I mean, you can't shut up your mouth without first shutting up your brain. That's why we're transfigured by the renewing of our mind. But we can sit around here and study these plagues till hell freezes over. But unless they're empathized in you and it's spoken, it's meaningless. There is a need for confession. The confessional, I mean, it's not like, oh, Father, I'm sinning, I'm going to do five Hail Marys. Confession is speaking. First of all, what's there, and finally, confession means speaking the same thing as God. But if we're talking about the implications of these things, and you don't speak it, then it will not be meat to you. I don't care, we can study the spiritual implications and go deeper and deeper and deeper in the subtleties and nuances of spiritual meaning, but unless you see it, unless it becomes meat and it's spoken, it will do you no damn good. You understand me? What?
I agree with all that, and yet I don't understand. I don't understand something. I don't understand why you're saying it or something.
I'm saying it because we talk about this stuff, and I say, there's almost never a response except in rare circumstances. There's never a speaking by you all. That's why we are a small group. You're not here to be a student like at First Baptist Sunday School or something. You're here to be a participant, and by your words to cause a big fire to go on out there. And that there's only life that will last through that fire. That's why I'm speaking it. I was just using Harry's deal as an example.
Yeah, it's like what was going on here, the idea of rebellion in me, didn't have anything to do with all the work I had to do, and he was interrupting the work I had to do. I mean, that's what I thought was going on, but that wasn't what was going on. I was doing what I wanted to do. I was sacrificing to my idol of neatness, cleanness, orderliness, finishedness, appearance, and he was coming along and saying, "Well, that's stupid. Don't do that. Because people are going to eat dinner." Well, I didn't care. I didn't care about the fact that people were going to eat dinner in the smell of paint fumes. What I cared about was making progress toward getting the temple.
That's what I'm trying to say.
I guess also, like, you know, like I don't say it, but like even I spend a lot of time working in the flower beds right now, and years ago that would have been me growing flowers. You know, that would have been it. But now it's like, you know, I'm working. It's like I'm trying to make a seed grow instead. know, I get seedlings, but I also get weeds, so I have to yank out the weeds. And even though the seedlings I do get, I yank up some of them so the other ones can grow better. You know, and on and on. And that's, I feel that way constantly. You know, whether it's, I mean, obviously not constantly, but a lot, way more than ever. I guess that's why I was like, it didn't connect somehow with me.
Well, but it has to be spoken. And the reason it has to be spoken is, if I don't care if there is a vessel with pure revelation, that pure revelation will turn to spiritual cancer unless it's given. I don't care. I mean, you know, we've taken it so that when I say to you, the stupid liturgy, we don't know how to do it, is to say, do you have anything to say? Because you've taken it to mean, do I have anything against somebody, or am I really in trouble, or...
like,
I mean...
Oh, that's not important.
Yeah, the idea that you have seen is what makes the angels sing.
Well, I yanked up a bunch of seedlings today and ate them for breakfast. It made me feel pretty weird.
Yeah, it's like an argument.
It's like, here, you know, and they smelled good. It was like, this is my suffering to God. It smells good. You know, so, chomp.
Yeah, it's like our garden. You have terrible ants, ants are. And when I first realized that the ants were there, I had the same experience of, there's giants in the land. Oh, no, the garden's just going to fail. We can't go out there, there's ants. Terrible.
Right.
It's not like it anymore.
Okay. Well, I don't want you to sit around and make up stuff now, but I just want you to speak it when it's there, and then feel it, be as ready to speak something that's the thing that you've seen is ready to say, oh, poor me.
Yeah.
Go ahead, make up. Go ahead.
Yes.
I wish we'd throw sex in with the rest of the stuff. I wish you could leave that outside for a while.
Wait. Who said anything about sex?
No, it's this thing about, he's just same place St. Augustine it was. It's Lord make me chaste, but not just yet.
That's right. Maybe about 6 months.
So which one is it?
Alright. Which is capital B.
Verse 8. And the Lord said unto Moses and unto Aaron, take to you handfuls of ashes of the furnace, and let Moses sprinkle it toward the heaven in the sight of Pharaoh. And it shall become small dust in all the land of Egypt, and it shall be a boil breaking forth with blains.
I look forward to this every year.
I do too.
They all do.
Breaking forth with Daryl in September.
What do the blains think?
With blains.
I think it's time to get on.
Upon man and upon beast throughout all the land of Egypt. And he took the ashes of the furnace and stood before Pharaoh, and Moses sprinkled it up toward heaven, and it became a boil breaking forth with blains upon man and upon beast. And the magicians could not stand before Moses because of the boils, for the boil was upon the magicians and upon all the Egyptians. And the Lord hearkened, the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, and he hearkened not unto them, as the Lord had spoken unto Moses.
Why? How come Pharaoh didn't have boils?
Pharaoh had boils.
How come?
He
said
big, stately robes to come on.
The magicians could not stand before Moses because of the boils. Was it because of a state of uncleanliness, or because it was so uncomfortable?
Well, because it probably was very uncomfortable and hurt. And
bad fever.
Bad fever. But anyway, let's talk about it. These are interesting. In every ancient culture, and many of them common, but not so with Egypt. With Egypt, it was only so under extreme conditions that they sacrificed a human, the human sacrifice. Of course, it was something other than them. I mean, I'm going to sacrifice that person or that person. And they sacrificed it to this terrible god, Typhon, who was considered the father of the Sphinx. He was the god of pure evil, Typhon. And here now they had, you know, they probably, in extremeness, had tried to sacrifice something else. I mean, they violated every principle of their own law to try to, as these plagues were coming down. Well, finally they got to the biggie here, and they had to make a human sacrifice to avoid any further, because each one of these, they thought, do you understand? They didn't say, okay, this Jehovah or Yahweh is mad at us, it's Hapi is mad at us, it's, you know,
yeah.
It's they went down the line. So now Typhon is mad at them, and somebody's got to pay. So we can spend months and months and years on this, but just visualize that there, it says the furnace, singular, and it was a furnace that was used only in times of extreme emergency in this Pharaoh's court. And Moses knew it was there, knew what was happening, and he reached in and grabbed a handful of the ashes from the human sacrifice and threw them into the air. And these boils.
So the human sacrifice was, they put them going, they burned them.
Yeah. And he threw them into the air, and as they hit the air, then this condition of these incredible boils came out on every one in the land, except in Goshen, where Israel was. Now, what the hell does that mean? Go to Isaiah 1. Somebody read verse 1 to verse 6.
The vision of Isaiah, son of Amos, which he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, the kings of Judah. Hear, O heaven, and give ear, O earth, for the Lord has spoken. I have nourished and brought up children, and they have rebelled against me. The ox knoweth his owner, and the ass his master's crib. But Israel doth not know, thy people doth not consider. Ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors. They have forsaken the Lord. They have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger. They are gone away backward. Why should he be stricken any more? He will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick, and the whole heart faint. From the sole of the foot, even under the head, there is no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. They have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment.
Okay, that's it. As the death that was inherent in those ashes, you know, just touched the wind, signified by the Holy Spirit, then your condition becomes apparent. Your wounds and bruises and putrefying sores, you have leprosy, all of these things. And if you don't know this, you can never proceed any farther. You'll stay in Egypt trying to get it right.
And the end of the flesh is those ashes.
Right.
Because Egypt is the purpose.
Right. Now, go to Isaiah 19. Oh, yeah, go there. It's 19. It's all about Egypt. The burden of Egypt. Behold, the Lord rideth upon a swift cloud, and shall come into Egypt, and the idols of Egypt shall be moved, or shaken, or disturbed at his presence, and the heart of Egypt shall melt in the midst of it. Now, in Exodus 9:14, where we're going to study in a minute, it says that God is sending, in truth, I mean, he says it in Exodus, that God is sending these plagues upon your heart. I will set the Egyptians against the Egyptians. He shall fight everyone against his brother, and everyone against his neighbor, city against city, kingdom against kingdom. And the spirit of Egypt shall fail in the midst thereof, and I will destroy the counselor of, and they shall seek to the idols, and to the charmers, and to them that have familiar spirits, and to the wizards, etc., etc., etc.
What's a familiar spirit?
What is a familiar spirit?
I mean, as opposed to any other spirit, why would it matter?
Hmm?
What difference would it make if it was familiar or not?
Are you sure you want me to answer that?
Yeah, I do.
It's one that is assigned to you.
Ew. Heck. I don't like that answer at all. You make up a new answer.
Okay, back to Exodus.
It's one that knows your address.
Actually, it's the one that finishes all of the ends of the ice cream parties and stuff like that. Jason,
the heart of Egypt shall melt is what go to Psalm 22 a minute. Verse 14. This is the prayer of Christ and the cross. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? Verse 14, he says, I am poured out like water. All my bones are out of joint. My heart is like wax. It is melted in the midst of my bowels. My strength is dried up like a potsherd. My tongue cleaveth to my jaws. Thou hast brought me into the dust of death. Though he were a son, yet he learned obedience by the things that he suffered. We believe, we don't, Pharaoh does. Pharaoh believes that the role, that if I'm getting it right, that if I'm doing this God stuff right, that there will be no pain, there will be no angst, there will be no depression, there will be no tribulation, there will be no fighting. The evidence that that's what you believe is every time there is pain or suffering or fighting, you think you need an answer. Can you accept that pain and suffering and fighting and depression and anxiety and doubt and fear are necessary? Mm-hmm. Though he were a son, yet he learned obedience by the things that he suffered. Why then? I mean, after last night, I have no doubt. I mean, God prepared me very well. I mean, my jaw went out. I thought I was going to go into the screaming memes again. It feels like the left side of my body has been beat up by a baseball bat. I have no doubt that this stuff is true, because I've experienced it. I have serious doubts that some of you believe this stuff is true, because every time there is a problem, every time you are in a state of confusion or anxiety or angst, you think it's a strange thing. You have to have some solution. Do you see how simple life would be if you thought, if you really believed that it wasn't a strange thing to suffer?
Yeah. You know, when Peggy and I fight, I mean, I hate to fight. I really do. I don't like it.
Everybody else loves it.
Yeah. And,
he's special.
And, it's like I can't live with it. I can't live with it like that.
You can't live with not liking fire. You can't live with
fire. To find the best state. You know, like without any tangible resolution to it.
Well,
there is.
No.
I can't believe you just said that. You really can't live.
Well.
What does that mean?
It means that state of like anger or feeling like there's not harmony between us, or at least what I perceive as harmony. I mean, that's an unbearable condition for me to be in. Instead of seeing it like this, that it is not a strange thing to be in that place, and that the fruit of it is obedience.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I hear that and I think, okay, be happy. and then I can't.
Where does it say be happy?
Well, I mean, I'm telling you, this is what I think. So it's like, okay, you're supposed to enjoy suffering and party and hate it.
You say that.
And everything, you know.
Right. Okay.
In the state.
What?
The state you've described, which to me is a desirable state, I cannot really imagine it, but I know it's a desirable state. In that state, does the pain or the suffering or whatever it is, the negative thing, is it less than, is it somehow less than the first priority, somehow less than absolute foreground? What happens to me if I'm in pain, it becomes the number one priority. It becomes absolute foreground. Everything else goes either completely away or way behind it.
Well, that's the only reason then is because your senses haven't been exercised to discern soul from spirit. I mean, that's what we're about. Not that you would learn anything, but so that your senses would be exercised to discern soul from spirit. I mean, you're not going to remember all this shit.
That's like what came down an hour or so ago. I mean, as it came to my awareness that I was really upset with you, with the situation, with myself, with my feelings, it became absolute foreground. I mean, I couldn't push it aside, I couldn't ignore it.
Well, all I know is that through the passage of time and through the foolishness of preaching, it's by the foolishness of preaching that men are saved. Because this is foolish shit. And so and everything else is God's business. The passage of time and the foolishness of preaching the cross. The preaching of the cross is foolishness to to them that believe not, to us it's the power of God. So that's all I can tell you. Go to Deuteronomy 4. Verse
14.
Deuteronomy 4, verse 14. Moses is Deuteronomy. All of you know what Deuteronomy means? Second law. And it was written and reviewed after 40 years. They got the first law at Sinai and Leviticus. And Deuteronomy is the second. And it's just almost a repeat of the same thing, but 40 years later to another generation. But there's some expansions on the tail and stuff. But anyway, so he's speaking in the past tense now in verse 14. And the Lord commanded me at that time to teach you statutes and judgments that you might do them in the land whither you go over to possess it. Take you therefore good heed unto yourselves, for you saw no manner of similitude on the day that the Lord spake unto you in Horeb out of the midst of the fire, lest you corrupt yourselves and make you a graven image, the similitude of any figure, the likeness of male or female. That's because of that Israel has no art. I mean, it's got modern art, guys, but there's no ancient art in Israel. Because they were so concerned that they would make to themselves images. The likeness of any beast that is on the earth, the likeness of any winged fowl that flieth in the air, the likeness of anything that creepeth on the ground, the likeness of any fish that is in the waters beneath the earth. And lest thou lift up thine eyes unto heaven, and when thou seest the sun and the moon and the stars, even all the host of heaven should be driven to worship them and serve them, which the Lord thy God hath divided unto all nations under the whole heaven. But the Lord hath taken you and brought you forth out of the iron furnace, even out of Egypt, to be unto him a people of inheritance, as you are this day. The iron furnace is Egypt itself, and its function is to be a refiner's furnace.
Yeah, iron at that time would be strong. I mean, they didn't refine iron until real late, because they couldn't get a fire hot enough.
That's right. Okay? So the idea of the experience of a furnace is all you can expect. That's what it's here for. That's what time and space is here for, is that antagonism, that coming against. If you're married, you have one function. Your wife is to be your companion antagonist. That's what helpmeet means.
I haven't forgotten that. That's one scripture I haven't forgotten.
Okay. All right. I don't want to start hail, because that's too big. let's spend a couple minutes reviewing something else that's hinted at in that memo, but for those of you that have forgotten, another function of Passover is the removal of all 11 from your premises.
Yeah.
The removal of all of the 11. And the leaven isn't, you know, it's, anyway. The leaven is three types according to the scriptures. The leaven of Herod, the leaven of the Sadducees, and the leaven of the Pharisees. All of you know about the leaven of the Pharisees. That's being a hypocrite. But not many of you really understand the leaven of the Sadducees. If you did understand the leaven of the Sadducees, you'd never again trust your own self again. Because in any arena that you're trusting or leaning on your own arm to plan some activity, to think about tomorrow and some manifestation, that's the leaven of the Sadducees. Because it denies the power of the resurrection. And therefore, if the resurrection doesn't occur, the power of God, then I have to protect myself. I have to take action. And the leaven of Herod is the seeing of lack in any arena of your life. Now those three leavens, you better start now. I mean, it's less than two weeks to Passover. And the other part, and the other component, which is the test, sort of, the compliance tester of all of this stuff, is your relationship with the brethren. Yeah. You cannot maintain, and you cannot go into Passover with aught against anyone. You start in here, you start with this group, and you can't have aught against any of the big group either, because we celebrate Passover together. So you better begin your search for aught too. So it's just a very short time, and we're going to spend more time talking about this up there tonight. But
yeah, it's like when you said Sadducees, the first thing that came to my mind was earlier we were talking about the condition of being in whatever it is, intense pain or whatever it is, the negative thing, and not paying attention to it. And I thought, I can't imagine that. And it really is, you know, where is the resurrection? I don't see it.
Anybody have anything else? Take it large, person.